Welcome back to The Faith Explained on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio mobile app. This is Cale Clark, your host. We're going through the biblical roots of the rosary. Where in the Bible can you find these mysteries? And right now we're working through the sorrowful mysteries of the rosary, and we're at the fourth sorrowful mystery right now, the carrying of the cross. And where in the Bible can you find this? Well, a few different places in the Gospels, of course, but we're going to look right now at Luke's version of this account, which you can find in Luke chapter 23, beginning at verse 26. So let's read this together. "And as they led him away, they seized one Simon of Cyrene, who was coming in from the country, and laid on him the cross to carry it behind Jesus. And there followed him a great multitude of the people and of women who bewailed and lamented him. But Jesus, turning to them, said, 'Daughters of Jerusalem, do not weep for me, but weep for yourselves and for your children. For behold, the days are coming when they will say, Blessed are the barren, and the wombs that never bore, and the breasts that never nursed. Then they will begin to say to the mountains, Fall on us, and to the hills, Cover us. For if they do this when the wood is green, what will happen when it is dry?'" Okay, let's stop there and talk about this just for a little bit. The Roman practice of crucifixion wasn't just designed to kill someone. And the Romans were very good at doing that. Believe me, they're super efficient killing machines. But it was also designed to extract maximum humiliation and degradation. And believe me, as we've seen with the scourging at the pillar, the crowning with thorns, the mockery of Jesus that took place at the hands of the Romans, we looked at this in our last episode when we talked about those two mysteries, the scourging and the crowning with thorns. We know that the Romans really relished this violence against Jesus, as did the religious authorities of Jerusalem. So they were both guilty of this. And the gospel writers don't let either the Romans or the religious leaders of Jerusalem get off the hook. We've seen that the high priest and his cronies beat Jesus quite severely on Holy Thursday evening, put a bag over his head and said, "Prophesy," and would punch him and spit on him. The Roman soldiers did the same, striking him with a centurion's staff, dressing him up, of course, in a mock coronation of the Caesar, the Roman emperor. So now we come to the carrying of the cross. And you can pretty much forget about all the artwork you've seen where Jesus is carrying a huge cross all together, just as we would normally depict a cross with a vertical beam and a horizontal beam joined together. Forget about all that. And you maybe seen the movie The Passion of the Christ, in which Jesus is carrying a huge cross like this. Well, the reason why Mel Gibson filmed it that way was he was trying to recapture scenes from very famous paintings about the way of the cross. But in reality, Jesus would not have been carrying a full cross. The Romans would have the vertical stake of the cross firmly fixed at the execution site. That's where it would stay. And what would happen would be that the condemned criminal would carry only the horizontal beam of the cross, which would have been pretty heavy on its own right, across one's back. It would have had sort of the arms looped around the cross beam, and they would have been forced to carry this horizontal beam, which was known as the patibulum, to the execution site. Then it would have been linked up with the vertical beam of the cross, which stayed there, and that's how Jesus would have been crucified. And this is what Simon of Cyrene, we're going to get into Simon of Cyrene in just a few moments, that's what he would have been carrying, the horizontal beam of the cross, carrying Jesus' cross for him. Now, the Romans did, in fact, crucify people in a lot of different ways. They were pretty inventive with their violence on this front. The great historian of the times, Josephus, the great Jewish historian, talked about the war between the Jewish rebels and the Romans from 66 to 70 AD. And during that time of insurrection, the Romans were very inventive about crucifying the rebels in all kinds of different positions, just for sport, just for their own entertainment. And we know that Romans would use different types of crosses. Sometimes it was a vertical stake. And in fact, the Jehovah's Witnesses believe that Jesus was crucified on a stake, not a cross. That's not true. Also, the Romans would have used an X-shaped cross from time to time as well, somewhat like the cross of St. Andrew. But we know that Jesus' cross was a T-shaped cross, as we traditionally see it in art. It was, in fact, that way. How do we know that? Well, one clue is right here in Luke's gospel, that Simon of Cyrene is carrying this horizontal crossbeam, which virtually guarantees that it is a T-shaped cross. And I remember visiting the offices of the bone collector of Israel, as I like to call him, Dr. Israel Hershkovitz, anthropology professor at Tel Aviv University, and he has a number of skeletal remains from the ancient world in his offices, and he's really made quite a study into crucifixion in Roman times. And so he did say he thinks that Jesus was crucified on an X-shaped cross, but I don't think so. One of the reasons why we know this also, besides what I said before, was that when you find ancient manuscripts of the New Testament, copies of the Gospels, sometimes just to save time, the scribe who's copying the text, instead of writing out the word for the cross, which is the Greek word staros, we know that the New Testament was written in Greek, sometimes instead of that, they just put the sign of the cross. They just put a cross in the text. But it's always a T-shaped cross. It's never an X-shaped cross. And believe me, that would have been gold. If Jesus really had been crucified on an X-shaped cross, that would have been fantastic for the gospel writers and for the scribes, because Christ in Greek is the word Christos. Well, the first letter of Christos looks like an X. It's the Greek letter chi. It looks like an English X. And you might have seen the chi rho emblem for Christ. And so chi would have been perfect. If Jesus really was crucified on an X-shaped cross, how poetic would that be? He's the Christ. It starts with an X. He was crucified on an X. They would have just simply placed an X in the text instead of the T-shaped symbol for the cross. But so that's a good indication that the early Christians knew Jesus was crucified on a T-shaped cross. And also, very few depictions of the crucifixion artwork showed up for, you know, a few centuries, really. Later on, it became quite prevalent to see the crucifixion in art, but very hard to find things from the early centuries. One thing that they did find, archaeology has discovered something called the Palatine Graffito. It was discovered in 1856 in the Palatine Hill area of Rome, and it was really a soldier's barracks. And just like modern-day soldiers, a lot of modern-day people, they were into graffiti. And sometimes we see graffiti in public places. Well, these soldiers were no different. In the plaster walls of their barracks, they were making fun of a young soldier who had converted to Catholicism. His name was Alex, or Alexamenos. And sometimes this is called the Alexamenos Graffito. Because really what the other soldiers did was they drew their compatriot, this other soldier, and they depicted him blowing a kiss to a figure. And you can Google this image. You can see it for yourself. They picture Alex blowing a kiss to this person who has been crucified. And he's on a T-shaped cross, naked, and he has the head of a donkey, which is a very anti-Semitic, anti-Jewish reference. Anti-Semitism existed back then. It exists today, too. And so that also could be proof that people knew that Jesus was crucified on a T-shaped cross. Anyways, the caption on this little cartoon, this graffito, was as follows. Alexamenos worships his God. It's another sign that people thought that Jesus was divine, that the early Christians worshiped Jesus. They thought he was God in the flesh. So that's some evidence from the ancient world that Jesus was crucified on a T-shaped cross. It's also the fulfillment of a biblical prophecy from the book of Ezekiel about people being marked with a sign on their foreheads, the tau. And that tau, that letter T, that tau looks like a letter T in English. And again, in the book of Revelation, we see the servants of God marked with this sign on their foreheads, this tau. And so add all this together, and you've got a pretty good case that Jesus was crucified on a T-shaped cross, just as we traditionally believe. Well, let's talk a little bit about this Simon of Cyrene. Here's what it says in Luke chapter 23, verse 26. As they led him away, they seized one Simon of Cyrene, who was coming in from the country, and laid on him the cross to carry it behind Jesus. This is undoubtedly a historical reference. Simon was a real guy. First of all, the Romans always had the criminal carry his own crossbeam to the execution. The fact that Jesus didn't, well, that tells us a couple things. Number one, Jesus was already in really, really rough shape. And this is why he dies so quickly on the cross, only after 3 hours. Sometimes people could linger for days on crosses. Well, Jesus had already suffered a severe beating on Holy Thursday night at the headquarters of the high priest, where the thugs of the high priest beat him up. We've already talked about that. He probably had a sleepless night in his little dungeon there. Then he was handed over to the Romans early in the morning. Obviously, they scourged him. Many people would die from the scourgings. We detailed this in the last episode. Massive loss of blood. And then, of course, the soldiers beat him again as they do the mock coronation. Not to mention all the spiritual stress in Jesus' body that would have been manifesting itself physically, knowing the ordeal he's going to have to go through, knowing what is at stake. Remember, in the Garden of Gethsemane, he was sweating blood, and that's an actual medical condition when people are under severe stress. Think about how that would have manifested in his physical strength, knowing that he's going to suffer for the sins of the world. It's also embarrassing for the early church to put this in, that Jesus did not have the strength to carry his own cross, because in the gospel, back in Luke chapter 9, he commanded his followers to carry their crosses. He said this in Luke 9:23, "If any man or if anyone would come after me, let them deny themselves and take up their cross daily and follow me." So the fact that Jesus couldn't even carry his own cross because of his weakened condition is somewhat embarrassing for the early church. So they certainly put it in the gospel because this is the way it actually happened. You're listening to The Faith Explained on Relevant Radio. I'm your host, Cale Clark. This is our series, The Biblical Roots of the Rosary. We're looking at the fourth sorrowful mystery, the carrying of the cross. Now let's talk about Simon of Cyrene for just a minute. Where is Cyrene? Well, it's a city in North Africa. And in fact, there was a pretty big Jewish population in that city. And in fact, there's even a special synagogue that was populated by Jews from Cyrene in Jerusalem. And if you look at the Acts of the Apostles, chapter 6, we see this. Let's look at it together. And this really has to do with the arrest of the first Christian martyr, St. Stephen. Starting in at verse 8 in Acts chapter 6, "And Stephen, full of grace and power, did great wonders and signs among the people. Then some of those who belonged to the synagogue of the freedmen, as it was called, and of the Cyrenians, and of the Alexandrians, and of those from Cilicia and Asia, arose and disputed with Stephen. But they could not withstand the wisdom and the spirit with which he spoke. And then they secretly instigated men who said, 'We have heard him speak blasphemous words against Moses and God.' And they stirred up the people and the elders and the scribes, and they came upon him and seized him and brought him before the council and set up false witnesses who said, 'This man never ceases to speak words against this holy place and the law. For we have heard him say that this Jesus of Nazareth will destroy this place and will change the customs which Moses delivered to us.' And gazing at him, all who sat in the council saw that his face was like the face of an angel." So Stephen was treated very similarly to his master Jesus. But we see that who was in on his arrest? Some of the Cyrenian Jews. So Cyrene was well known as a place that had a big Jewish population. And we don't know whether Simon of Cyrene was simply visiting Jerusalem for the Feast of the Passover, as many thousands of Jews would, or whether he actually lived in Jerusalem. We don't really know. But all we do know is this. Luke tells us that he's coming in from the country, and he is forced to carry Jesus' cross. And by the way, this was something that the Roman soldiers did all the time. And you might recall in the Sermon on the Mount in Matthew chapter 5, verse 41, Jesus talks about going the extra mile. He says, "If anyone forces you to go 1 mile, go with him too." Now, this is a reference to the Roman practice that a soldier could take any of the native inhabitants of the empire, no matter where they found themselves, and grab them and force them to carry their military backpack, all their gear, their rucksack, if you will, for 1 mile. They could force them to carry it for 1 mile, but then they had to let them go. And the Roman road system was incredibly, for its time, it was very efficient. It allowed for a lot of easy travel around the empire, and it actually facilitated the spread of the gospel once the church got going, and it facilitated missionary preaching and St. Paul's travels, for example. And along the Roman road system, at every mile, there was a stone marker. It would tell you where exactly you were, what the distance was to the next city, and to Rome itself, the heart of the empire. Plus, it would warn you about any dangers that were coming up along the way. Well, Jesus encourages his followers to go that extra mile, which would have been pretty shocking to any Roman soldier that anybody would actually go above and beyond what they were forced to do. And so maybe even the Roman centurion who saw Jesus die and confessed that he was the Son of God later on, maybe he had had an experience with one of Jesus' followers that way at some point. We'll never know. We'll never know. But we do know that Simon was fingered by one of the centurions. He probably saw that hand pointing at him saying, "You, come out of the crowd." And he might have felt like he was in the wrong place at the wrong time, but providentially, he was exactly where he needed to be. Because this meeting with Christ, although not looked for, very unexpected, not even desired, was something that would change his life forever. And not only his life, but the life of his family, the life of the church itself, because he is still talked about to this day. In fact, in Mark's version of this story, in Mark chapter 15, it talks about Simon's sons, Alexander and Rufus. He's mentioned specifically by Mark. And then later on, in St. Paul's letter to the Romans, in Romans chapter 16, verse 13, Paul mentions Rufus. Now, I don't know if it's the same guy. Not that many people named Rufus. It could have been a different guy. We'll never know. But my money is that it's the same guy, because Mark's gospel was written to the city of Rome, to the church there. And so when Mark mentions this account of Simon carrying the cross, he says he's the father of Alexander and Rufus, who everybody in the church would have known because they converted to the faith and they were well known. In fact, Paul calls Rufus eminent in the Lord. So not only did they become believers, they became leaders in the church. And so this encounter with the cross is something that God had ordained for Simon. Now, it's interesting that Luke says that Simon was carrying Jesus' cross, walking behind Jesus. It says the soldiers laid on him the cross to carry it behind Jesus. And this is really emblematic of what Jesus says, that you have to take up your cross daily and follow him. Wow, what a literal picture of that. But he's not the only one that is there. We also see the women of Jerusalem, and Jesus speaks to them. Luke says, "And there followed him a great multitude of the people and of women who bewailed and lamented him. But Jesus, turning to them, said, 'Daughters of Jerusalem, do not weep for me, but weep for yourselves and for your children. For behold, the days are coming when they will say, Blessed are the barren, and the wombs that never bore, and the breasts that never nursed. Then they will begin to say to the mountains, Fall on us, and to the hills, Cover us. For if they do this when the wood is green, what will happen when it is dry?'" Now in the Bible, mountains are usually places where people can hide. We see, even to this day, we see forces like Al-Qaeda, which would hide up in the mountains of Afghanistan. And so in the Bible, it's no different back in the first century. And so what's Jesus referring to? The fact that there's going to be nowhere to hide when the judgment falls on the city of Jerusalem. That's why he says, don't weep for me. Weep for yourselves and for your children, because many of the little children who are running around, children of these women who are crying about what's happening to Jesus, they will have even more tears later on, because those children will grow up and they will join the rebel forces that will fight against the Romans in the year 70 AD, but they will lose, and the entire city of Jerusalem will be destroyed. The temple will be burned to the ground in a blazing inferno. There is going to be so much carnage and so much death, and this judgment fell on the religious leaders of Jerusalem and the temple because they rejected Jesus. So Jesus knows the fate of Jerusalem has been fixed. I hope you've enjoyed this little look at the biblical roots of the carrying of the cross. We're going to continue with this series. Don't miss the next episode tomorrow at 12:30 Central. And if you have missed one, you can always check the podcast and share it with a friend. Until next time, I'm Cale Clark. God bless you.